Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're focusing on the ongoing Brexit negotiations after a breakthrough of sorts in terms of agreement on the transition period, which should smooth the implementation of the UK's departure from the bloc. Our panel will give us their perspectives on the week's busy news cycle and explain why they agree or disagree with Brussels' chief EU negotiator Michel Barnier's assertion this week that this has been a decisive moment. We start with Dean Turner, economist at the UBS Wealth Management CIO here in London, who joins us with a UK perspective and to touch upon some of the domestic political impact. Dean, we should start with a reminder, of course, that a transition deal agreement has long been the UBS base case for you and your colleagues. So given that, remind us of what's happened this week and tell us what you've made of it.
The UK will be entering a transition period. Now, from an economic perspective, my sense is that that should be treated as broadly good news. The reason for that being that businesses up and down the country who would have to otherwise exercise contingency plans to prepare for a no deal will have more time now to reconsider their plans. So an immediate shock, or the threat of an immediate shock to the economy, looks to have been reduced.
Joy Lodico is columnist at the London Evening Standard and a regular analyst of the nuances of the Brexit negotiations and associated fallout. She brings a trained eye very much from the Westminster Village perspective. Joy, let me ask you the same question I asked Dean. What have you made of what we've seen this week?
We're trying to build a bridge from this point in time to the point when we have actually left the European Union, except we don't know what that bridge is going to look like. So what we've done is sort of pointed in a direction. We haven't actually got a landing spot yet. And that is the substance of negotiations on the future relationship. So all we've said is we'll just build the structure on one side, and that's the transition arrangement. And we may never actually get to actually building the bridge at all. So what they've agreed is roughly this, is that we now know what we're going to do about citizens' rights between now and December 2020, which is the end of this transition period. We know what we're going to do about fishing rights, which may not be at the foremost of most people's minds. We now have a rough idea of the absolute fallback position on what we're going to do about Northern Ireland. They've had these texts, and what happens is when they agree something, it all gets highlighted in green, and most of it is now done. David Davis and Barnier will put it to the Council of Leaders, so it will be the leaders of the EU27. There might be a little bit of kickback from Dublin, there might be a kickback from Paris, but largely we just think this is now going to be how we proceed until the EU's end date of December 31st, 2020.
And let's get a European perspective from Ricardo Garcia, Head of European Macroeconomics in UBS Wealth Management CIO. Ricardo, it's long been the base case for you and your colleagues at UBS. What's happened this week? Ricardo, what have you made of it?
So I would say we have entered a phase where we are seeing greater progress. This is also being confirmed by different stakeholders like Angela Merkel, quite meaningful. In addition, the equation as of late has changed a little bit with the Salisbury attacks, right? Because we are changing from a setup where basically, you know, we have two parties negotiating with a third factor coming into play, right? Which is where the UK and the EU share the same interests. And you could see that this has become actually a dominating topic at the European Council. And I think this has been helpful also in continuing with a good faith in achieving an orderly withdrawal agreement in due course.
Let's talk about the body language, the rhetoric as well that we saw from the negotiators. Ricardo, despite some sunny demeanours, there are still some big gaps, though, and we shouldn't be too complacent, I suppose. But are we at least past the posturing and into real meaningful progress now?
If we continue in the shape of the last couple of months, I think we can be relatively optimistic. I think the first phase that was dominated by posturing is over, where progress also was very slow. And I think on this basis, where we have seen really both parties really sitting down and agreeing on the terms of the withdrawal agreement, although not everything has been agreed, as you have said, but I think the basis is there to complete that. And I think today's announcement from the European Council underscores that the EU is still fully determined to preserve, as far as possible, a close relationship with the United Kingdom that goes beyond just a free trade agreement.
There are, though, still some big gaps. And if we reflect on what David Davis, for example, had to say, he struck quite an upbeat tone on how this suggested a rosy future, etc. Dean Turner, back to you. Progress clearly outstanding on some huge issues, the Irish border question among them.
I think it's very fair to say that although we've had this statement from David Davis and Michel Barnier, can't get away from the fact that, as Mr. Barnier also highlighted, nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. And there is still a number of points to be agreed before this transition period can come into effect. The Northern Irish border is one question. But also there does have to be some kind of middle ground found in terms of the final wording that goes into the Article 50 exit agreement on the future relationship between the UK and the European Union. Clearly, that's not going to go into much detail because negotiations about the final trade settlement can only really happen after the UK becomes a third country. But there still has to be some kind of agreement in the meantime. So, yes, there's clearly some risks out there.
And on the question of the Irish border, Joy Lodico, there's still nothing concrete on that so far. Have all the parties here agreed, essentially, to rather kick the issue into the long grass, at least for now?
It's a problem for the UK. It's also a problem for Ireland. And they just haven't as yet found a solution. So what the EU suggested was that Northern Ireland stays within the customs union. Theresa May said, no, can't possibly do that. And Northern Ireland, as it is currently ruled by the DUP, also doesn't want that because it doesn't want to be seen in any way as divisible from the UK. Mm. It wants to have exactly the same rules as the UK. However, you can't put this border back up, and Republic of Ireland knows that just as well. We're still talking about this imaginary idea of frictionless trade across the border, which will be done by electronics. And if we don't find that solution, we'll find another solution. What they've basically agreed is the border is not coming back up. They will find a way through it. It is going to take a couple of years. It is going to be the downfall of the deal if we can't sort it out. It is an incredibly serious problem that I think very few people had spotted before when they decided to say, let's leave the EU. And ironically, it's the Conservatives, who used to be known as the Conservative and Unionist Party, who are most wedded to the idea of Northern Ireland being part of the UK. And they're the ones who are now having to grapple with their consciences if they are Brexiteers. Some of them are even saying, well, we shouldn't worry about this problem, it'll be fine.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at the transition period and we'll ponder how this week's events might or might not shape or reshape the months ahead. Do you have any sense, Ricardo Garcia, of what the UK's deals with external actors might look like? And likewise, any sense of the nuts and bolts of the actual prospective UK deal with the main EU bloc, given what we've seen this week?
Here we're basically looking forward to classic trade deals, right? Like any other country is agreeing with other countries. I think, though, there is a big difference from the past, which is obviously that the UK will have a different negotiating power. So when you refer to the transitional period where the UK will start to negotiate free trade agreements, you will still have the issue that other countries, third countries negotiating with the UK, who want to see how negotiations with the EU go, right? Because it will have implications also for the UK market. But I think the most important point is that the UK will have a different negotiation power. So rather than having like the largest economic bloc behind you, you will just negotiate as still an important country, right, with much less weight than an economy like the European Union. I think on the positive side, the UK will certainly be able to leverage its relationships globally. It has a number of special relationships, for example, just think of the United States, and that I think will help them. But I think overall, it's easier to negotiate with 28 members or states than just on your own.
Dean Turner, what about that fact that the UK can commence trade deal discussions within the transition period, not signing deals off, but at least starting the dialogue? What kind of reassurance does that offer, or are there just still too many caveats?
I think there's still too many caveats around that, if I'm honest. The reason being that, there's an 18-month transition period during which this applies. And to negotiate a trade deal with any country within that time frame is extremely ambitious, especially because the UK will also be in the process of negotiating this trade agreement with the European Union. And a lot of countries are going to be very reluctant to come to final terms or a final agreement, I should say, with the UK, whilst the bigger question of what happens with Europe is still outstanding. That said, we should be too negative. I mean, clearly it's a positive development from a UK point of view because it allows the process to begin sooner. And perhaps more importantly, politically, this is a good move because it should calm some of the concerns of the Brexiteers within the Conservative Party, as we know, have the ability to scupper Mrs. May's plans at any point, it would seem.
Now, we started the programme talking about the UBS base case for the transition period and how this has come to pass. What's the base case now going forward for the post-Brexit deal, both in terms of timings and the sort of broader characteristics? Ricardo Garcia.
The aim of the European Union, or the template of the European Union, is basically the Canadian Free Trade Agreement, also known as CETA. CETA. That is basically the most advanced and modern free trade agreement that the European Union has closed in the past. It's also the newest one that has been fully completed. And that is basically the template that the European Union has in mind. Now, on top of that, the European Union wants to add a number of areas, you know, just think of air traffic, security cooperation, or fishing grounds. So in some ways, it's Canadian Free Trade Agreement plus, which is as good as it gets, right? As soon as you become a country that leaves the European Union, the single market and the customs union, and from that perspective, the UK would still be treated differently than third countries, despite everything.
Finally on the programme, Ricardo, can we get from a European perspective your sense of the market's interpretation of recent events? What's the market made of what we've seen?
The focus has been rather on the obviously on the US actions on the trade side, and here we have published on this in the last few days. It has played out as we have foreseen. So the EU is not seeking an escalation and a spiral. For obvious reasons, the focus actually of the US actions is not Europe, rather China. Nonetheless, the EU is still, and with that also the United Kingdom, is also in the firing line as the tariffs on steel and aluminium also apply to the European Union. We have only temporary exemption until the 1st of May. And if nothing changes, the tariffs will be applied from May onwards. So we're still not out of the hook. But the good thing is that leaders today confirmed that the European Union wants to work within the rules of the World Trade Organization. And this means that, as we wrote a few days back, that an escalation between the EU and the US is unlikely, right? Because as long as you remain within WTO rules, it's more difficult to impose harsh measures on one or the other side.
And Dean Turner, to you, what about the market and its interpretation? What's the market made of what's happened this week?
A transition agreement which does lessen the downside risks to the UK economy in the short term has clearly been perceived well by the markets, and we think that's a fair assessment here. So the good news that we've seen around the sterling over the last few days should continue for some time yet.
I wonder, given the fresh focus of the market on more terror and on Russia, given the de-escalation, hopefully, re-Trump and the US and Europe, are there actually some reassurances broadly available here, Ricardo Garcia?
I think we can just, you know, send a signal of comfort that at least on the European side, things don't seem to be escalating between the US and the EU. Negotiations, Trump escalation, and I think really the focus now on China. And also, at least from this part of the world, we shouldn't be more worried right now.
So what's next? What are the dates in the diary to anticipate? Why, I wonder, Joy Ladiko, does David Davis look even more smug than usual this week? Does he have reason to? How are you looking to the future?
Well, David Davis probably shouldn't look so pleased with himself, because you could sit down and Open Britain, who are the kind of Remain campaign, could point out that, in fact, we've capitulated on all sorts of things we said we wouldn't capitulate on, which include things like we wouldn't pay any money, we wouldn't submit to EU rules, with, you know, the implementation period wouldn't have this fixed time. So he shouldn't really be looking so pleased with himself. But what if you follow what Theresa May does in relation to these negotiations, is she does capitulate. In fact, she doesn't like a fight, and she will stand down rather than lose an argument. So I think David Davis is actually just feeling quite relieved that we've got this far without anybody, you know, having been sacked, without a huge bust-up. What happens next? The final kind of crossing of I's and dotting of T's on this should happen by October. Some people are saying actually it's so close it may even be the summer. And then we sit down and we start talking about what we do in the future relationship. The other thing we can also do is now start to, at which point we actually have to begin to fill in a picture of what relationship we want. The other thing we can also do is now start talking, as soon as this is signed off, trade to other countries. Now, we can't actually do any trade deals, but we can actually begin the informal process of those conversations. We can actually get that trade deal signed, which means that Liam Fox, our trade secretary, has been doing diddly squat actually since he was appointed, finally gets to enact his own Brexit vision of Britain, the global nation that can trade with absolutely everybody. At that point, we'll see how popular we actually are.
And that's Joy Lodico bringing us to the end of this 181st edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.